The Port of Vancouver says the plan to expand container traffic at Deltaport is unfolding in a manner that ensures the authority meets its mandates. The Port Authority is charged with the safe, environmentally, and financially sound management of one of the largest ports on the west coast of North America. And that brings us to this week's conversation. As outlined in a previous episode, one of the port's terminal operators says it is being shut out of the container site planned expansion and believes the Port of Vancouver is in a conflict of interest in doing so. We invited Duncan Wilson of the Port of Vancouver to join us for a conversation that matters about the arduous process that has been undertaken for many years to determine how to meet the demands for container services in the future.
Conversations That Matter is a partner program for the Center for Dialogue at Simon Fraser University. The production of this program is made possible thanks to the support of the following and viewers like you.
Welcome to Conversations That Matter. Thank you for coming in and doing this.
Happy to be here, Steve.
You know, it's unusual to have this kind of conversation about what's happening at the port, you know, to bring it so much out into the open about these massive long-term projects. And in particular, you know, we're going to talk about what's happening out in Delta, at the Delta port, the Roberts Bank area. But I think we also need to give context to how that fits into the interplay of all of the Port of Vancouver. Just how important is the Port of Vancouver to the overall economy of British Columbia and Western Canada, if not the entire country?
We're critical to the entire country. So about a third of all of Canada's non-North American trade goes through the Port of Vancouver.
A third.
So that's an enormous amount of our economic productivity.
What is the economic value of that?
It's about $12 billion in GDP a year. And we're growing, as you probably have been following over the last number of years. We've grown by basically in the last 6-7 years, we've grown by about the same amount of annual volume as Canada's second largest port, the Port of Montreal, handles. So basically, we've added a Port of Montreal into the Lower Mainland in the past 6-7 years in the context of 16 municipalities, dozens of First Nations, and, as you know, quite an activist population. Mm-hmm. And we need to do that again in the next 6-7 years. So an enormous opportunity for Canada, but really, really challenging to get it done.
What has happened that we've seen such a tremendous amount of growth? Because that's more than what we're producing just in Canada. It's meeting more than just our needs. Why is there this attention on the Port of Vancouver and Prince Rupert, I think, by extension?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's broadly speaking, the world needs what Canada is selling. The world needs to eat, so it needs grain. The world needs to grow crops, so it needs potash. So a lot of what we are selling is really in demand. And then in relation to Prince Rupert and Vancouver, I think there's a big story around container growth too. Mm-hmm. So, and we think often of containers as just import retail products and things, which is true. So it's very important to consumers and retailers, but it's also export capacity for Canada. So in Vancouver, we have quite a unique situation where most of the containers that leave here go back full of Canadian export products.
They do. Huh. Because you keep hearing stories about containers arriving full and then being discarded as empties or turned into a variety of other storage units.
Yeah, and that's unusual, actually. What shipping lines want is they want the container to come back to the port and get put on a ship and sent back to Asia as soon as possible. That's their objective. Mm-hmm. And what we do is we basically intercept them, fill them up with Canadian stuff, and ship that back. So that's, basically it makes us more competitive, too, in comparison to, say, the American ports. And even in Prince Rupert, they do less of that than we do here in Vancouver.
So is that the reason that we're more competitive than American ports, or is it the interconnectedness of the transportation infrastructure that exists in Canada that allows us to get into central United States?
It's there are many reasons that we're more competitive. So backhaul is one of them. And we're just talking about containers here, but that's one of them. The other thing is just the cost of moving a container through Canada is lower. So if you're either, it doesn't matter whether you're in Chicago or you're in Toronto, the cost of getting your container there through Vancouver is going to be lower than it would be coming through LA, Long Beach, Seattle, Tacoma.
How come?
I think we have, we're fortunate to have two very efficient railways, and the cost of moving containers by rail is lower. The cost of moving things through the port and the efficiency of moving things through the port is better here. We have on-dock rail on our terminals, which is an advantage. We're served by three Class I railways. That's a significant thing. So there's a competitive environment here. So, you know, we don't just have one railway serving the port. So CP and CN have to duke each other out for the business here. And so that's an advantage as well.
So I got to get you to hang on for a second while we take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back. Conversations That Matter is brought to you by Odlum Brown, a client-focused investment firm that starts client relationships with straightforward conversations focused on you, your aspirations, and your investment priorities. Odlum Brown has been a supporter of Conversations That Matter from the day we started this show. Their only condition was that we provide a non-biased conversation with people from all sides of all sorts of issues. And of course, we couldn't produce this show without the support of Oh Boy Productions. If you're looking to produce a show like this one, I suggest you reach out to Oh Boy. They can help you produce it, and they can help you build your audience. And we also need your support. I ask you to please pledge $1 per show by going to conversationsthatmatter.tv/donate, because those dollars add up and play an important role in helping us produce this show. Now, back to the show. So when we take a look at the way in which this container traffic is coming in and anything else that's moving through the port, as you pointed out, there's this interplay between the three major railways, and then there's the road infrastructure. And you know, we've had this Pacific Gateway strategy that I think a lot of people thought was really around improving commuting times throughout the Lower Mainland. Really, that was put in place to continue to ensure that the Port of Vancouver remains competitive. Am I right about that?
You're right, but it's not just about the efficiency of the supply chain. It is also about the impact on communities. So mm-hmm. those investments, the debottlenecking infrastructure, so the South Fraser Perimeter Road, the Roberts Bank Rail Corridor, North Shore, so the lower level road project in North Vancouver, all of the stuff that we're currently building on the South Shore, plus the current round of infrastructure projects we're building, are all about separating road and rail,
mm-hmm.
and or improving road efficiency in the case of SFPR. And that it allows for longer trains.
Mm-hmm.
It eliminates the slowness of, if you're sitting in traffic and you want to cross, you live somewhere like Langley and you have to cross a railroad track. It takes away that friction, that interface. So there is a benefit to communities, and there's also a benefit, obviously, in terms of Canada's trade.
So how important is it that the focus continue to be on the Roberts Bank area, especially in the expansion of the container facilities? Because so many of those containers wind up on trucks that are going out onto that road network. It takes us out of the bottleneck of the Lower Mainland and allows that vehicle traffic to skirt the heavy traffic issues, yeah. Does it not?
It does.
Yeah.
And South Fraser Perimeter Road was built in anticipation, frankly, of the project that we're advancing right now, Terminal 2. So I've been with the port for 16 years, and we've started talking about this project back then. And it's the South Fraser Perimeter Road, the investments in the Robert Banks Rail Corridor, some of the other highway improvements on 17 and others that have happened have been done in anticipation of this project.
Mm-hmm.
And the port is currently contributing significantly to other infrastructure upgrades along the highway routes in that region.
So we have the infrastructure in place to be able to expand the volume of containers that are going to come through the Port of Vancouver, particularly if we stay south of the city. And that puts us into the Delta Port Point Roberts area, or Roberts Bank area. But now we have, you know, we've got an existing container facility, and it's been identified that we need to expand on that moving 10, 12 years out, that we know that the demand is going to be there and it's going to continue to grow.
Right.
This is where we kind of run into a little bit of conflict and why you're here today.
Yeah.
Because the current operator there at Delta Port is saying, well, give us the authority to expand on that. We can meet all of those needs. Why is it that you are not just saying, okay, well, that's a good idea, it looks cost-effective, we can move in that direction because we have this long-standing relationship with you? You're going, nope, we need to put this elsewhere within that complex, and we need to be actively involved. What are the reasons behind that?
There's a complex set of reasons, but fundamentally, I need to go back to our mandate. So We have a mandate to facilitate Canada's trade in a manner that protects the environment. So we're required to protect the environment, considers input from communities, and also ensures a competitive port infrastructure for users.
Okay.
So we have a mandate to build infrastructure to set that up. Oh. So the number one challenge that we have in the container sector from the port's point of view is competitiveness or lack of competitiveness. So we have one terminal operator that has almost 3/4 of the market share. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things we want to address by bringing on a new terminal is to bring a third terminal operator to the west coast of Canada.
So why is it important to do that?
Well, what happens is that if you're a Western Canadian-based importer or exporter, you're effectively dependent on this gateway. Mm-hmm. It would be cost prohibitive for you to try and import or export goods through U.S. ports, if you're in Western Canada. Mm-hmm. So for consumers in particular, as well as, for example, BC-based exporters, you're relying on the port to be competitive. Mm-hmm. And unlike, say, railways, where there's two major railways in Canada, railways are highly regulated in this country.
Yes.
Terminals are not regulated, so they can crank up their rates as high as they want. So in a constrained market, and we're seeing continued growth, lots of growth in the container sector.
Yeah.
We're going to run out of capacity in the mid-2020s. So in that context, the value of a franchise where you have such a dominant market share is enormous. So it totally is a rational thing for the terminal operator to want to stop our project.
Yes.
But what we're doing, in our view, is in the best interest of Canadians.
So the way that I hear that, tell me if I'm correct about this, is that you're saying by having a competitive environment, it's going to keep the cost of using these terminals for both importers and exporters more competitive, so it will reduce costs, and that it reduces the stranglehold that one or two operators will have on that marketplace. Do I have that correct?
You have that correct.
Yeah.
And I'd add to it too that what happens is if I'm running a terminal and you're doing it in a constrained environment, you're going to sweat those assets. You're not going to bring on new expensive capacity until you absolutely need to. Mm-hmm. And we've seen that when, if terminals are left to their own devices, they're not going to bring on the capacity as quickly as we would like it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an opportunity for us to make sure that Canada's West Coast container capacity is not constrained.
There is a cost, though. When I take a look at the costs that are projected based on the port, you're looking at about a $2 billion project, whereas the current supplier says, well, we can do it for half that cost, not using public funds. Is that not a legitimate consideration?
Well, first of all, I need to make sure I'm clear that we're not going to be using public funds either. The Terminal 2 will be paid for by an independent terminal operator through a long-term lease. That's how Deltaport was built, and that's how Deltaport operates. So it's kind of funny that the terminal operator now comes back and says that there's some problem with that, because the port built Deltaport, we leased it to them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're doing currently with, we have a world-leading terminal operator in DP World. Here at Centerm, we just this last week started an expansion project in partnership with them. Again, we're building a landmass, we lease it to them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way it works. It's not publicly funded. It's funded but on a commercial basis. So I think that's really clear to get up front.
Mm-hmm.
If we wanted to build, we initially looked at locations for Terminal 2 that were exactly where Global Containers is talking about expanding.
Right. To become their Delta Port 4, Delta Terminal 4. Yeah,
exactly. And that's in the shallow intertidal habitat, in eelgrass habitat in particular.
Which moves closer to the shoreline.
Right.
Yeah.
So from a fish point of view and from a fisheries point of view and a juvenile crab point of view, that's very important from an environmental point of view to protect that. And we've been told in the past, we've twice been told by Fisheries and Oceans that we can't expand there. And we were told to look at locations on the other side of the causeway.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we've been doing. And in fact, terminal
that allow you to move further, have an offset that's further from the shoreline and not going to invade those eelgrass beds.
So terminal two is going to be located in deeper water, less environmental impact. The reason it's more expensive is because it's more environmentally sustainable. Mm-hmm. So it's a costlier project to build. It would be much cheaper if we could go build in the shallow intertidal habitat. But GCT is also, when they're talking about the cost of building their project, they don't have an idea about how much offsetting would be for that. That would be enormous because you're building a hugely valuable habitat. You're going to have to build an awful lot of offsets. It's not impossible, but it's going to add, you know, at least hundreds of millions of dollars to a project like that.
Mm-hmm. So how do you create this land? Because what we're talking about right now is that you are going to create land in water right now. Where are the source materials going to come to fill in that space?
This is a really cool story. So what we do is annually we dredge the primary navigation channel of the Fraser River.
Mm-hmm.
And so we dredge up river sand to keep it deep enough for vessels to get up to the terminals. What we're going to do is some of that material is sold off into the local construction industry for preload, and some of that material is disposed of at sea, so it's just clean sand, river dredge material that's basically disposed of outside of the river.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to capture that material. Instead of disposing at sea, we're going to use that to build the landmass for Terminal 2.
Recycling, in a way.
Basically.
Yeah.
And so it'll take a few years to build the landmass, but that's the process.
Hmm. So let's go back to your responsibility to the environment and how you say the Delta Terminal 4 is going to have an impact in that sensitive area that is now between the ferry terminal and the current facility. It's become this horseshoe shape that is now home to a pretty rich eelgrass bed. Why is it so important that we protect that?
Well, eelgrass is particularly important for juvenile salmon and juvenile crab. So obviously those are important. And right now, I mean, one of the things that the port is very focused on is reducing the impact of marine shipping on southern resident killer whales, an endangered species.
Mm-hmm.
Southern resident killer whales feed on Chinook salmon.
Yes, they do.
Chinook salmon stocks have been in decline, so Chinook habitat is particularly important. That eelgrass is Chinook habitat. Mm-hmm. And the port is also, we're also investing in other habitat enhancement projects on the Fraser River to try and enhance habitat for Chinook and other salmon.
Mm-hmm. So do you have eelgrass planting operations underway as well? Because I understand that we can do this.
Yeah.
We can actually sort of tie the eelgrass to what amounts to a spacer, drop it down, and it will root into the shoreline. But that habitat has been disturbed over the years and has been a contributor to declining populations in coastal salmon, Pacific salmon.
So we have done eelgrass planting in the past, and we would, that's a potential offset, for example. So one of the things that happens if Terminal 2, if there's a recommendation by the panel to the minister to move forward with Terminal 2, we will then work on the specifics of the offsetting plan with Fisheries and Oceans. So in collaboration with Fisheries, we'll determine what offsetting is required.
Mm-hmm.
It could be eelgrass, it could be other kind of intertidal habitat, it could be all sorts of different things.
So it's complex.
Very.
But you can understand why the current terminal operator would say, come on, give us the opportunity to do this. Why is there, and they point out, they say, you're the landlord, you're the adjudicator, it puts you in a conflict of interest. Yeah. How do we address that as a concept or an issue?
It's not a conflict because we don't operate container terminals. We lease those to independent and private operators who run the terminals. So they won't be competing with the port. They'll be competing with a new terminal operator.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just like, as I said earlier, that's how we built Delta Port. That's how we're expanding Centerm. And that's what we're planning to do for Terminal 2. We build the landmass. We lease it to the private sector.
So what's the process of identifying and then negotiating with a proponent that would take on that terminal? Because these are large and probably international organizations, and GCT says that, we're a Canadian-based company.
Yeah.
Why would you open that up to somebody who would be outside of the Canadian community?
Well, GCT is largely a Canadian-based company. Two of their three shareholders, one of them is Ontario Teachers Pension Fund, the other one is BCIMC, another pension fund, and then IFM out of Australia. So they do have some foreign ownership there.
Okay.
And the pension funds obviously are trying to protect their investment.
Yeah.
And so there's significant pressure, I'm quite sure, from those shareholders on the terminal operator to do everything they can to stop Terminal 2, which is, in my view, anti-competitive. But I think that it's totally understandable what their behavior. If I was running a container terminal, I'd be trying to stop it. I might not be using some of the same tactics, but I'd also be trying to thwart it.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't. The port has a mandate that to act in the best interests of Canadians, and we're trying to make sure that the port remains competitive for consumers. The port remains competitive for BC-based exporters and Western Canadian exporters. I mean, that's what we exist for.
Mm-hmm. Where are we at right now, and how long before we know for sure whether or not Terminal 2 is going to go ahead, or what will happen?
Well, we just wrapped up panel hearings on Monday, so this is a full Canadian Environmental Assessment Review panel process, which we've been in for 5-6 years now.
Yes.
Incredibly slow process. The panel will be making its recommendation, I expect, probably by the end of this year to the minister. The minister then will have to review that decision. As we've seen with for example, from Trans Mountain, we expect there would be consultation by the Crown between the time the panel submits its report and the time the Crown makes the final decision. And then ultimately, government will need to decide, does this project move forward or not? So we're hoping for a positive recommendation from the panel, and then it's in the hands of the new government.
And we have a federal election coming along, and depending on how that turns out, may also put another bit of a wrinkle in the timeline.
Yeah, so it's any time there's a, if it's a continuation of the Liberal government, you know, probably it's status quo in terms of moving forward.
Right.
If there's a change in government, always new governments want to have another look at things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, fortunately, this project, as I said, has been in the works for a long time.
Yes.
So
with a previous government.
I was talking to the Harper government about this project,
right.
And now to the Trudeau government. So it's not as though the Conservatives are very familiar with this project and the importance of it. The Liberals are very familiar with the project and the importance of it. And frankly, in the province, on both sides of the legislature, are very familiar with the project and its importance. So this is a project that crosses partisan lines. It's in the best interest of the country, and I think our elected leaders know that.
Well, and from my perspective, it looks like there has been the kind of foresight that has gone into long-term planning that allows for this truly exhaustive consultative process to play itself out so that we get the best possible decision.
Yeah, and I'm confident we're going to get a very strong, robust recommendation out of the panel, whatever it is.
Well, thank you ever so much for coming
Absolutely.
In and sharing
Thanks
all of this, because it helps to clear up a tremendous number of elements that you go, didn't know that. And I think that it also gives people an opportunity to see what and how the Port of Vancouver operates.
I'm happy to do it anytime.
Thanks.